Before we start this episode, we do want to make a very clear declaration about some boundaries on this topic. First of all, we don't know Eugenia. We are not her therapist. We are not anyone who sees her private life, and we don't want to speak for her, and we don't want to claim that we know what she's going through. But we do think that there is a conversation to be had about what happens with mental health when it's public and how do people cope. But this is not intended to be an analysis of Eugenia's life.
I need to hide first. I'm going to take a moment. Let me cover myself in soap so nobody can see me.
Sounds like bullying.
Kind of.
Hearing these stories absolutely changed my life.
No, but for real. And I think in a lot of cases, like, legitimate concerns that people have where they're actually like, I am here in treatment because I want to recover. Mm-hmm. I'm desperately trying.
Hello, and welcome to Eating Disorders Off Topic. I am Adam Pope, along with Joy Nolenberg. Hello, Joy.
Hello.
And today we are talking about, we're doing the Eugenia Cunha episode. Eugenia Cooney, who I've been moderately aware of for some time, certainly being in treatment and, you know, the 14s, 15s around there. Earlier, and just kind of being familiar. Starting that, you heard our announcement at the beginning, so that's kind of, you know, what we're going to be talking about today, and then going into some possible, talking about pro-Anna content towards the middle or end. So, I am not super familiar, like I said. So, I'm going to have Joy introduce the subject, and then we can see what we can learn about this.
Yeah. So for anyone who isn't aware, Eugenia Cooney is a social media personality. She's on YouTube. She's on Twitch. She's been around for quite some time. So she's developed quite a following. And she is known for, she's kind of like an emo girl, has kind of always been her thing. She's a gamer. She's really into makeup and really into Disney stuff. But she is also known publicly for looking very unwell. She's been very underweight for a very long time. Because of that, there is a ton of controversy. People have attempted for years to sort of force her into treatment. There's a lot of petitions about trying to get her deplatformed because, they think it's very triggering for people. Yeah. And so I think, like, when we have this conversation, I want to be very clear, like, I'm not taking a stance on what she should do or what YouTube should do or what any of this. I think we just want to unpack, like, the pros and cons, the you know, different perspectives that people have and sort of boundaries and what this means about eating disorders in general.
So. And certainly, like, I was thinking about this before the episode, too, like, any, like, parents who have kids around her age or before, like, just like stuff like this that is available to the general public on YouTube. So, you know, if you're on YouTube looking at games, if you're on YouTube looking at music or makeup tutorials, this is something that could be in the algorithm and getting kicked to kids, possibly.
Yes. And so the people who are in the camp of wanting to get Eugenia deplatformed, come from that perspective of there's vulnerable children, there's people with eating disorders, mm-hmm. they're viewing this content. Is it harmful to them? And not just that, there's also the question of, is it harmful to Eugenia to constantly have people comment on her weight and be known for that? So that's definitely one perspective. There's also the opposite camp, which begs the question of, she is really unwell, but she also doesn't, like, she talks about makeup, she talks about gaming, she talks about other things, and if she's not actually, and actually if people comment and they say, oh, I wish I looked like you, and she will always say like, oh, no, look like yourself, like, don't look like me.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not, well, there's some controversy about whether or not people think she's actively promoting it, because on the one hand, people say that she does a lot of body checking, she does a lot of clothing try-ons where she's obviously showing her body. And on the other hand, she's always telling people love themselves, you know, don't try to look like her.
Yeah.
So then the question becomes, if someone is unwell with a mental illness, do we take away their public voice? Which is another slippery slope.
You know about like how many followers she has? Like what's her content? Like output look like?
I don't know exactly, but I know she has a lot of followers. Like she's one of the sort of OG YouTubers, and she's on Twitch and she's on many different platforms. So she's got quite a following.
So where did it start? You said like 13, 14, she blew up. Like, do you remember what that kind of environment was like?
Yeah, I mean, I've only vaguely known about her from those years, but I know that she did a lot of, like, emo content, a lot of fashion content, a lot of, I don't know, she was pretty popular, and at the time, she was fairly underweight, and so people remarked on it at that time. I don't know that that's when she started, but that's when I think people became more aware of her.
Mm-hmm. So, and how old is she now?
I think she's almost 30, but not quite, like 28, 29.
Oh, so she lived by herself? She lived with her mom?
So she lives like with her
what's that situation?
Family, and I think they have two different houses, and that is another subject of controversy as well. We never see her dad or brother, but her mom appears on camera a lot of the times, and a lot of people have expressed concern over the health of her family, the health of her mom, the health of their interactions. And again, I'm not an expert. I'm only sharing what I have heard. So this could take it for what it is.
Yeah. Like what you watch. I mean, you're watching the same thing the rest of us watch.
Yeah.
Or the rest of us could. So.
Yeah. There's a lot of concern where, her mom is participating in the videos a lot. Like there was,
oh,
she will buy her clothing and have her try it on. And, you know, she's obviously really, really unwell. And her mom seems very oblivious. But, again, you know, we don't know what happens behind the scenes. So I don't know. But
has, like you said, there's been an effort, like people trying to help her. Is it like petitions or something to be like, hey, let's like get her into it. It's tough because you don't want to make assumptions about somebody's, you know, physical or mental well-being just based on their public appearance, right? But at the same time,
absolutely,
like if they're like expressing things like in comments or videos or saying things, or like at that point, like maybe there is some, you know, urgency to wanting to help her. Has she been like receptive to that? Has she commented on that?
So what's happened over the years, if you look at her comment sections, they're absolutely filled with essentially people just wanting her to get better. And again, this is based on an assumption that it's an eating disorder that's going on, which is pretty likely given her,
of course,
her, you know, but at the same time, you know, we're not her doctors.
Yeah.
But there's kind of a split. There's people who are like, we just want you to get better. We care about you. And then there's people saying, please go to treatment. You deserve better. And then there's people saying, you're just doing this for attention. Everybody stop paying attention to her. She's going to die. Like, nobody cares. Like,
wow, that's brutal.
Yeah. And there's people literally saying,
I mean, it's the internet, but still, I mean, you,
yeah,
every time I hear it, you know, it's just so callous.
People get really mean too. They're like, you're killing people and it's all your fault. And it's interesting. And actually a couple of years ago, she had a friend, I think her name was Jacqueline Glenn. who, it's complicated. So from what I understand, Eugenia doesn't leave the house much, and like she hasn't had a driver's license. She has a driver who drives her. Her parents control where she goes. So she seems very, very isolated and very, very insulated, and like she can't just freely roam the planet.
Yeah.
So her friends had,
just generally as far as like social life, family life, we're not dealing with like a, you know, typical go out with friends, go out to eat with family type of stuff here.
No.
You said she's pretty insulated.
She's pretty insulated. So her friends, I think it was Jacqueline Glenn and a couple of other people, talked her into coming with them. I guess they had a plan to go to like an escape room or something, and she got permission from her mom. And what happened though is then they had mental health counselors or social workers come and interview her, and they did a 51-50 hold.
Get out!
So they, they forced her into treatment. Yeah. And it's weird because like her mom like tried pressing like kidnapping charges or something. Her mom flipped out. And Eugenia herself says that it was actually a very traumatic experience. At the time she was like, it seems to be sort of a mixed bag. She said it was kind of, when she came out, she had put on some weight, was looking, had more energy, you know, had more focus, like was seeming to be a little more present.
Yeah.
And was a little more open at the time about like needing to take care of herself and like all of those things. But it was one of those things where, and I think this is probably where we could have some interesting conversations. There's a difference between forcing someone to comply with a meal plan and getting their buy-in to actually recover based on whether or not their eating disorder is playing a function in their life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like maybe it was too tied to her personality and her public figure and who she was for her to like let things go.
That's very possible. When she came back, she had a lot of apprehension about appearing on her channel looking slightly different and knowing that people are going to be judging that. And any of us who've been through eating disorder recovery know that sucks. Yeah. You know, when you show up and you're like, hey, I look different now, and everybody makes assumptions. Yeah. But I, this is just my guess. And again, this is my guess. I am not an expert. I don't know her. My guess is her story mirrors a lot of people's stories where the family is very dependent on the child for their emotional support. And there's like a sense of like the child does not have the ability to speak up and say that they need something. Like,
can you unpack that a little bit? Like explain like how they would depend on a child for emotional support. She's like the center of the family or something?
In a way. So Eugenia herself has said that her mom and Eugenia are extremely close. And when they've had videos where she's interacted with her mom
should we read close as codependent?
Very codependent. Her mom is extremely childlike when she appears. I don't know, she seems drunk or high sometimes. I don't know. But literally when Eugenia was placed on her 51-50 hold, her biggest fear is that she literally thought if she left the house with her mom would die. Because, like, her mom has her convinced that if she walks away from her, her mom will have, like, a broken heart and die. Yeah. So there's a very controlling aspect to it.
Oh, that's so abusive.
It really is. And it's hard, though, because it's, you know, there's very much a... Eugenia's heart is kindness and compassion, and I think that shows really clearly on her channel. But it also very much mirrors the pattern of people who have been groomed over time to be compliant and to do what everyone else wants and to ignore their own feelings. And it's a pattern that we see frequently in eating disorders, and it all, you know, can look all different ways. But what happens when you're always avoiding your own needs is, like, you still have feelings and they need to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So, like, starving them away will numb those feelings. And, yeah, so it's complicated. So there's a lot on all sides, and I don't think it's an easy situation. And I think it's been interesting over the years. Like, back in 2014, people were like, oh, you just need to go to treatment. You mm-hmm. know, like, just eat, just go to treatment. Yeah. And I think this is a great example of, that's true. You know, she does need to get physically well. Like, don't mm-hmm. get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying that's not true. However, if someone is using their eating disorder because they are feeling incredibly trapped, feeling like they're backed into a corner, feeling like they have no options, like they can't even leave their room, and they have all these emotions and nowhere to put them, like, just making them fully present and fully bringing all their emotions back online without addressing
that's gonna be worse.
All of the other stuff. Yeah, that's horrible. So I think it's a great example of, it's easy to say that the problem is food. That is a problem. mm-hmm. But it's not the only problem, I don't think.
What impact would you say she's had on the eating disorder community, if any?
I think it depends who you ask, and it depends how you define impact. So mm-hmm. there are obviously many, many people with eating disorders who see her as someone to aspire to, like, physically. She is known for spending, like, 8 hours or 12 hours straight on a Twitch stream and never eating or using the bathroom or drinking water, you know, which is awful. Yeah. I mean, she should be able to, yeah. you know, drink water and use the bathroom. In fact, it's weird. Like, she's literally been on Twitch streams where she has to, like, call her family to be like, hey, I'm going to go in another room. Is that okay?
What?
Yeah. So it's...
That's super controlling.
It really is. Yeah. And it's so difficult because it's one of those situations where everyone is... Like, people are being really, really mean in a lot of cases. They're thinking it's tough love. They're thinking, you know, they're thinking they're protecting other people. They're like, you're a mm-hmm. horrible person. You're being a bad example. But I don't personally think that, like, the problem starts with Eugenia. I think yeah. she is a symptom of a system that is sick.
So before we talk about that, you mentioned something about her character. So if we could, for just a couple of minutes, talk about, like, her character. Like, who is she? Is that she said, like, compassionate, friendly... like, what has been your impression of her when she's doing tutorials or something?
Yeah, she's actually been getting a lot of hate lately for embracing, I guess, like, toxic positivity, because she always wants positive content. She always wants everyone to feel loved. She always wants, you know, all of these things, mm-hmm. Which are good. I mean, they come from a good place, but then I think it frustrates people because people feel like,
that sounds like somebody ignoring... who really wants their family to be even and not rock yeah. the boat at all.
yeah.
That, like, exactly. sounds directly like, okay, everyone be positive, everyone chill. I've got to make sure all my family's needs and emotions are met.
Exactly. And it kind of goes along with, I know way back in the day, and it's controversial over whether or not people like or hate this book right now, but there was the book from the 1970s, The Golden Cage, you know, I think it was like Hilda Bruck or something who wrote it. And she wrote about the anorexic family where, you know, the anorexic child does not get to have emotions, but they have to prop up other people's emotions and they have to absorb, you know, they have to be the
wow.
the person that absorbs all of the emotions in the family. And then they're very compliant and they're very peacemaking.
Compliant is good for treatment.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I feel like if you're compliant, you'll be really good at treatment. Like, that's
right.
That's what you want. That's what you
As long as you're desire. In treatment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is something we've talked about at length on this podcast as well, is it's one thing to get people to comply with a meal plan. It's another thing to teach them that they're allowed to feed themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, ironically, so you mentioned enough.
Oh, go ahead. Before,
live journal. Tell me what's going on. What happened? Where did it start? You know, the proto Eugenias before it was her. You mentioned there were other people that were doing similar
just
things,
like,
or other groups.
The pro anorexia in general?
Yeah. How long has that been a thing?
Oh, as long as the internet's been a thing, I think. So this is interesting.
Oh, no.
So I have some thoughts on this as well. So back in the early 2000s, I had been involved in some eating disorder forums online that weren't like pro or anorexia or anti-anorexia. They were just like people with eating disorders hanging out. But from there, like, I kind of was involved in like promoting recovery on those forums and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, like, we would find our way into actual pro anorexia message boards.
Slippery slope?
What?
Slippery slope? To talk about eating disorders, and then all of a sudden it just kind of slides down, and then you're like, oops, I'm in pro ana now.
Oh, well, for me, it was about going in as a support person.
Okay.
You know? So from my perspective, what I saw when I spent time in those forums was, yes, people were promoting anorexia, but there was a lot more to it than that. What I saw was people who were lost and scared and feeling like they didn't have anyone to talk to.
Yeah.
And so they found these people who they felt understood them and their why they have their eating disorder and why mm-hmm. they're avoiding life and what, you know, all of these things. And what I really saw is people would go there and be like, oh, yeah, I'm just like you. I have an eating disorder, blah, blah, blah. But if you actually had a conversation with that person and were like, okay, but do you really want to be sick, or like, are you just scared? You know, they would actually happily talk about other things if they had someone who would listen to them. And so
it's
we
kind of like
actually,
they're going through like a collective trauma that just happened to have eating disorders as well. Like that was
yeah.
how they were experiencing that.
Yeah. And in fact, there was almost like a, like there would definitely be people that would join the forums being like, I want to learn to have an eating disorder. And they would just get roasted. You know,
wow.
People would be like, no, you don't. You know,
I did not expect that.
Yeah. Because it was like, no, you don't actually want this. And
interesting.
Like, yeah. But what I thought was the most
interesting.
That just
kind of like flips things on its head.
A little bit. Yeah. And so I have a very interesting relationship with a lot of like anti-pro anorexia stuff where it's like, you know, removing pro anorexia content from TikTok. Like, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's ultimately a good thing, but I think that certain methods of, censorship are more harmful or helpful than others. Like, for example, one of the things that would happen on these message boards is that, people would say like, hey, FYI, incoming, we've got an article coming out in whatever publication, so we'll see a big influx of people finding our site tomorrow. Prepare for Ooh. New members. And that's usually what happened, is like every time somebody made a public statement about a pro-anorexia forum, there was always a huge influx of new members who now found the forum.
That shouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So like the more people tried to bring awareness to it, the more awareness there was, and the more usage there was.
Oh,
and
boy,
the other
we just
thing
hit some kind of meta level doing a podcast.
Right? Exactly. So it's like one of those things where, like, the intentions are good.
This is good discussion.
The plan
though.
Is good, but mm-hmm. the reality doesn't quite match. And the other thing that we would see is when people signed up for these forums, they're registered, right? So there's a registered user list, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these forums, and I saw this happen in several of the different forums, they would get taken down. You know, petitions to remove them, the forum would get taken down. And then the next day, all of these people on the registered user list would get a message from the admin saying, we're over here now.
No.
Yeah. So it's like,
you're not doing anything.
Right. Exactly. And so, like,
and
I
plus,
don't
like,
think.
I feel for these people who, like, found a place to like finally express themselves and to talk like vulnerably about things that were going on in their lives, and like for a lot of it, like what you're saying is like not so much like Yeah, they'll probably talk about, like, calories and exercise and stuff, but some of it's just, like, here's what's going on in my life. Like, are you going through something, too? Like, how are you handling it? And that could be, I mean, that's incredibly therapeutic. I mean, that's one of the greatest things I experienced in treatment was not feeling so alone.
Exactly. So I think when I see people calling for censorship of pro-anorexia sites, it's one of those situations where I'm like, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good goal. But I think that it's not the root problem.
Yeah.
Like, the root problem is that people are lonely and scared and seeking connection. So I think, like, just shutting those down without also checking in with the people and saying, like, can we help you? I think that's an important piece of it.
So do you feel in the time since then that it's gotten, that maybe it's moved on from, you know, message boards and blogs to, you know, Twitch and YouTube? Has that been better or worse for the content for people kind of?
I think it's a little bit, like, when it was on message boards and when it was about people registering a username and then interacting as a user, like, it was sort of a different atmosphere than, like, when you come across a TikTok post that just has, like, pictures or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, in that case, it's like, just remove the post. Nobody needs to see that, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, like, when it's people who are actively seeking a connection, I think there's a gap of we need to figure out how else to get them to connect with people. And actually, in my experience of working like in the pro-anorexia...
maybe.
What?
Like a therapist or a recovery group.
Like a therapist. Or, I mean, what I found when I did outreach on these, like, pro-anorexia forums is that if you actually gave them a space to talk, like, people would happily make the jump to recovery-based forums. They just didn't know they existed. And wow. And they just, you know, people just wanted to be heard.
That's so powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So, yeah, they would happily make the jump to recovery-based forums. Because, like you said, people would come in and be like, hey, I'm thinking about getting an eating disorder. Like, how do I do this? And they'd just be like, get out of here. Like, you don't want this. We don't like it.
Right. Right. People would be so like, stop them, it. You're
yeah. So posing. If you give them that space to, and like, maybe like show them what recovery can be.
Yeah.
Like what can happen.
I think another important aspect too was letting them choose recovery versus forcing it on them. Because I think a lot of people avoided recovery forums specifically because they had a lot of ambivalent feelings about whether or not they wanted to recover.
Oh, yep.
And so depending on the forum, a lot of recovery forums are like, no, you need to actively be trying or get out. But there are a lot of people who find...
So they created like a second class pretty much of people that are like, you know, recovery curious, but like...
Yeah.
Want to talk about and stuff still.
Exactly. And I think a lot of the recovery curious people found themselves on pro-ana sites because they could talk freely where they didn't feel they could talk freely on a pro-recovery forum.
Oh, yeah. They are hardcore moderating those forums.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, moderating helped them because there are people who are trying really hard and they don't want to be triggered, and I think there's space for that. But I think maybe there's, like, different... We need different forums available for different people at different points in recovery, kind of. Yeah.
How can we apply this to Eugenia? In, like, has she ever expressed interest in recovery other than, you know, going that one time and being like, nah, that wasn't for me. That was traumatic.
I think, I don't know her personally, but having spoken with thousands of people with eating disorders over the past 20 years, the impression I get very much is that her eating disorder is her security blanket against something else that she's not talking about. And I think that the most well-meaning efforts to yank her security blanket away from her are going to get a resistance from her because they're not seeing... I think she's she's looking at the eating disorder, and that's a scary thing, but I think she's looking at something else that's even scarier. Mm-hmm. And so I think until people see what she sees, I don't think she's going to, like, let go.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Let's say I'm a listener. I occasionally tune in to see what's going on Eugenia's channel on Twitch or YouTube. How is my viewing? Should I change my viewing habits? Should I view it more critically? Should I not support the channel? What are things that individuals can do that maybe view or don't view?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting conversation around boundaries.
Like voyeurism? Does it feel like strange if like you view? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting conversation because on the one hand, if you're viewing someone who is sick, does that mean you endorse what they're doing, or does that mean you see the humanity behind them? And I don't think there's a specific answer to that. I think it depends on the person and what their goals are.
Yeah, there's no box to check before you push play on somebody's video. Like, are you sincerely viewing this as a compassionate individual, or are you just like hate watching?
Right. Like, if you're looking at her clothing hauls because you want to be triggered, like, that's clearly voyeurism, and that's clearly, like, your eating disorder and those things. If you're looking at it because you think she has an interesting perspective, she has an interesting style. She finds really interesting fashion. I think she could be a great, like, fashion stylist because she has a clear point of view, kind of. And then I think there's the people who watch because they're genuinely concerned and they feel like they're watching someone in danger and they just want to help. And I think that's not a bad thing. But it's also kind of like you said, like, if I watch, am I agreeing with it? If I don't watch, am I, you know, I think there's also kind of a boundary.
Like, she's just getting advertisers. I mean, they're just getting numbers on their end. So, like, yeah. Whether or not you're viewing it in a certain capacity, you know, you're just a number on that end of whether or not they buy ads on that channel or whether or not they bump it up in the algorithm.
Yes, exactly. So then there's the question of, do you want to, if you think she's a vulnerable person who's being used by advertisers. And there's also controversy about, like, she does, like, certain actions where she'll always get, like, donations on her Twitch stream when she does them. And people have you know, theorized that she's being exploited in some way. And again, that's part of the grooming compliance. You know, I do what people ask me and they reward me for it, whether it's good for me or not. And I think there's also a, you know, an ethical question of people saying, like, do I want to help promote a platform where she is given space to be used, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's up to the individual person where their own boundaries are. But there's also, I mean, it also is a great way to bring up the conversation of how stressful it can be when you care about someone with an eating disorder wanting to help and, feeling like you can't, and then having to deal with those feelings of helplessness. And then knowing where the boundaries of control or coercion versus, you know, jumping in and helping, you know, like, where does that boundary lie?
I think that's a good action point to step off on. You know, it reminds me of, you know, when I get asked questions of, you know, exercise after treatment, you know, like, when is it good to do, how much? And I'm just like, I can't tell you how you're feeling in that space, you know? Mm-hmm. Like when you're working out, like, sometimes your brain just, like, goes to places, you know, being like, oh, I'm doing this to get well, to run, or be like, oh, I'm doing this to burn this much, whatever, you know? Like, I can't tell you where you're at in that space. It's like when you're watching this content, like, I don't know where you're at. I think it would just be a good, just important to kind of investigate yourself where you are at when you watch things like her or view other, you know, similar content. Like, and a lot of those times they go back and forth, you know, like, you could watch her for a few minutes and be like, oh yeah, that's, you know, I want to look like that. And then all of a sudden just be like, Oh, no, that's not it. So, like, of course it oscillates. Just, I think being aware of it is really helpful in kind of understanding your own viewership and support, possibly.
Yes.
So, is there any there anything else you'd like to add?
I mean, I think that's a very good point. I think it's a lesson on boundaries. It's a normal human reaction to want to jump in and save someone. Mm-hmm. But I think that without fully understanding the situation, the average stranger isn't necessarily the person to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then it becomes a question of how to manage your own ethical boundaries and your own interaction and your own emotions around it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We should dig more into this topic.
What's that?
I feel like we should dig more into these topics. I enjoy sometimes just kind of leaving questions out there. And I feel like we've ended quite a few topics like that. Just being like, well, there it is. Like, we just talk about stuff, you know, and give you, you know, things to think about. And a lot of times that's where growth happens, you know, like allowing individuals that space or asking those questions and allowing for listeners to kind of investigate those things on their own.
Absolutely. And we'd love to hear, I mean, we do have a Facebook page. We'd actually love to hear people's thoughts on this because I don't think there is any clear right or wrong answer on any of these topics.
Mm-hmm. And if you know Joy from the Live Journal days, please chime in. I'm very curious to know what she was like online in like 1998.
Oh gosh. I mean, I think this is more like early 2000s, but honestly, I think I had a lot of learning to do. I mean, I had very good intentions, but I think I was still very much finding my way to healthy relationships and healthy communication styles. So I probably wasn't the best. I don't know. This is me looking back 20 years later. You know, when you look at your younger self and you're like, ooh,
Yeah, I got Facebook reminders from like 14 years ago.
Right?
That's a long time.
It really is, yeah. It feels like
a lifetime. And then thinking YouTube was 2006, 2007?
I think so, yeah.
When that started, that's kind of wild.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't in, you know, we hardly went to college or, you know, high school in that time. So, like, I don't even know. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely check us out on Facebook, YouTube. This is definitely going to be up on YouTube. Yeah, leave us messages. Send us emails, edofftopic@gmail.com. Check out our Facebook page. We want to thank Brianna Dunn for being our audio engineer for these episodes, for making us sound good. And then we do our stuff off Squadcast as well, which is another reason we sound good. So definitely thank you all for listening, and please reach out to us if you'd like to know any more. Also, from last episode, just given an update that was posted about a week ago, and we've got some good feedback about that. So the Facebook group is certainly still up to join if you want to be a part of the Survivor Coalition. If you're interested and have any questions about what that is, check out the last episode or check out our Facebook page as well. Is that it, Joy? I think I got it.
Yes.
I think I got it this time. All right. Have a good day, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.